roughly 24 to 92 hours ago, Stab's team of comedy scientists commissioned four specific humorists to give various potentially comedic takes on several random topics, which they'll now perform for the first and likely last time in front of a live studio audience.
That's you guys.
In a show called...
Oh, hello! Why, hello! Welcome to Stab, episode number 98. We're creeping up towards 100 over at the Sacramento Comedy Spot, December 16th. Our 100th show's coming up. Are you guys ready to meet your contestants? Yes! Great! Wonderful! Are you paying attention? We'll see. Please welcome to the stage, Corey Barringer! Corey Barringer! Yes! Also, welcome at the end over there, Jesse Jones! Jesse Jones! All right, and our third contestant was supposed to be Jacqueline Wyan, but she is homesick. Yeah, her and Corey are having a baby. He didn't know about.
It's going to be a real sick baby.
Since she wasn't able to show up, my cousin Lippy Whatnot is in town for the holidays, all the way from Minnesota. So thanks for filling in, Lippy.
Yeah, no problem. You betcha.
Okay, thank you for being here. On literally an hour notice before the show. So you got to write the whole show in about an hour. Just repeating that so the whole crowd knows all the material written by Libby Whatnot, my cousin, written in like an hour.
That's a short amount of time, huh?
That is, but thank you. Libby, how's Aunt Grace?
Oh, she's good after she got her the bunion surgery.
Okay,
you
Libby.
You know, yeah.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here. Let's go ahead and just start Stab. Oh. Feel it. This first segment's called This Was Today Once. Corey. Mm-hmm. Barringer, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's the first time you've ever.
Indeed.
Corey, on this date, 1982, Michael Jackson's second solo album, Thriller, is released worldwide. It went on to become the best-selling record album in history. Also on this very date, 1972, the illegal fireworks and illegal fireworks factory explodes, killing 15 people in Rome, Italy. How did you combine these to celebrate?
Well, this is a pretty important double holiday in my family. So just like we do with all the big ones, we had a barbecue. Now, despite being unable to trace any of our family back to Rome, we really strive to keep things as authentic as possible. So in addition to the barbecue classics, your hot dogs, your hamburgers, we really go all out with dishes like spinach ravioli or a baked ziti, both with just a hint of sulfur. Keeping the flavor true to the horrific explosion that killed 15 residents of the Prenestino district and preventing them from ever jamming timeless hits such as Billie Jean or PYT. A moment of silence is taken just before the meal, not only to remember those that were lost, but to give thanks for the 100 residents not killed but merely injured in the catastrophe, and that it is safe to assume most of which eventually listened to Thriller. But as great as the food is, the best part of the night is by far the performance. It's a tradition in our family that all the cousins get together to perform a perfect lip sync and dance routine to our favorite song on the album. Now, I know this is going to sound pretty cliche because, of course, it's everyone's favorite song, and of course, everyone just loves zombies so much. But we all dress like the victims of the explosion, five of which were children, by the way. And we get a smoke machine going, it's a whole production, and we perform, yep, you guessed it, Gonna Be Starting Something, the opening track from the album. And by starting something, of course, we are referring to starting a massive explosion that turned an 8-floor apartment building into a scorching hellscape nightmare.
Very good, Corey. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Yeah, I appreciated it. Oh, man, Lippy. Cousin Lippy. Whatnot. On this date, 2015, Nigel Buxton, British travel writer and wine critic, died. Also on this very date, 1887, the first indoor softball game took place in Chicago. How did you choose to celebrate these aforementioned events an hour ago?
Well, Johnny, you know, I celebrate like I do every year. You know, I went down to the old pub there in Pipestone at the bowling alley there and sucked down about a half a dozen or so lunkers until I could barely stand straight. And you know how I get after a few. I mean, we just had Thanksgiving and all. Right. I like to speak my mind and whatnot. Then I, you know all the bad things that happen in my head. I like to drink a lot to, you know, drown those out. Anywho, as far as that goes, I then schlepped down to the local sporting goods store there, and I picked me up an old aluminum swinger, you know, a real big one. And then I start to hit the streets, and I take a swing at the fences and breaking this and whatever's in my way, like furniture, automobiles, babies, you know, whatever it might be in my track until the authorities show up, and then, you know, they take me down to the old pokey for a bit, and that's usually what I do.
Okay, thank you very much, Lippy. That's thank you very much. Jesse Jones, just to clear Lippy, I wrote most of these for her. Don't judge my cousin. Jesse Jones, yeah. On this date, 3340 BC, it was the earliest believed record of an eclipse. Also on this date, 1940, Lucille Ball weds Desi Arnaz. How did you celebrate these two events in tandem?
Ah, wonderful. Simply wonderful. Why, these two events remind me of a particularly astonishing find I made in the wilds of the South American rainforest. On my most recent archaeological comedy dig this autumn. As our throngs of dedicated Stab listeners are by now keenly aware, I am the foremost comedy archaeologist in the Western Hemisphere. I have made it my life's work to recover, document, and preserve lost comedy artifacts from throughout the ages. Some of my more well-known discoveries are, of course, a shard of Mesopotamian pottery, appearing to depict a sassy oxen expressing his particular disdain for the start of the harvest season. A dick joke dating back to the Jin Dynasty. And one anthropological excursion in particular where I discovered a tribe of peoples hidden away in the forests of Peru who, through their verbal histories alone, passed on for untold generations, have maintained a story comparing the dissimilarities between how male tribe members collect the Guanabana fruit and how it is hilariously different from the way in which it is collected by the tribal females. But one recent discovery, which is slightly less well known, is a series of cave paintings discovered in France, which clearly depict man's first known situational comedy. Titled Oog and Mate of Oog. This long-running cave painting sitcom seems to depict the exploits of Hunter Oog and his gatherer mate, who is only ever referred to in these paintings as Mate of Oog, and the wacky, relatable misunderstandings of prehistoric mated pairings. Like when Oog's hunting alpha makes an unannounced visit to Oog's cave. Or when Oog's mate screeches and smears her excrement all over Oog because he won't let her shriek with Oog's rock banging circle. These 30-foot paintings often culminate with Oog's famous catchphrase, "Quiet mate," or "Oog crush skull." Oog eat brain meat. It also seems there was an apparent attempt at a spin-off titled Sludge Pond, focusing on the wacky characters who congregated around the fetid bog hole which Oog often frequented. but early reviews called it less fun than watching fire. And it was soon canceled and replaced by a new procedural drama titled Watching Fire.
Very good. I liked it. Brings us to our next category called reorganization. Please take this existing acronym and reimagine it. What does it now stand for? Who does it now represent? In hopes of people somehow coming together in these crazy times, today's acronym is NAAKKK. NAAKKK. What does it mean to you? Calm down, everyone. Calm down. Corey, what does it mean to you? NAAKKK.
So in 2001, a film called K-Pax was released, starring Kevin Spacey as a psychiatric patient that believes he's an alien. People around him don't believe he's an alien, and in filmmaking, that's what we call conflict. It received mixed reviews and was a rather large box office failure, about $3 million short of breaking even, and also inspired a lengthy legal battle over accused plagiarism. Today, the film is mostly met with indifference. The world at large has been splintered into three factions: those that have not seen K-Pax, those that have seen and hate K-Pax, and those that have seen K-Pax but don't remember if they liked K-Pax. Until now. The National Association of Agreeing K-Pax was kind of cool. This group of brave activists seek to bring a positive change to the K-Pax dialogue. Their stance? K-Pax is pretty cool, okay? It's based on a novel, so right there, you know, some time went into crafting the story. Even if it might have been somewhat lifted from another novel, but hey, it was settled out of court, so let's just move on. Instead, let's talk about the cast. When is Kevin Spacey not great in a movie? Honestly, he's an effortless talent. As is Jeff Bridges. The dude! Except he's not the dude in this, he's a psychiatrist. But still very entertaining in a dramatic role. Aaron Paul's in it too, and people sure liked him in Breaking Bad. And remember when the alien guy does that thing with the banana? Classic! This movement strongly believes that if the world can someday agree on this, it can move on to even bigger issues, like how underrated Seabiscuit was.
Very good. Corey, I liked it. I liked K-Pax. I liked it. It was a good movie. I thought it was. I didn't realize it was.
Saul Williams was in it.
Lippy, whatnot. What does the NAAKKK mean to you?
To me, it means not all arsonists keep killing kids.
Okay.
I don't know if you knew this, but once a study came out that said once a person becomes an arsonist, they generally move on to murder children. Just like pot is a gateway drug to heroin, right? So fire starting just opens the door to children murder. So I wanted people to know that that is not true. It's just plain wrong. Not all arsonists keep killing kids, okay? And whoever says that is not being truthful at all.
Thank you, Libby. Thank you. That was weird. Jesse Jones, what does NAAKKK mean to you?
Well, I'm gonna call an audible on myself here, because the voice that I was gonna do for this was a little too close to the voice that I was gonna that I just did for the first thing. I mean, it's not the same, but it's a little too close. So I'm gonna try a different voice, knowing that I wrote this for a completely different voice,
okay.
And I don't know if it's gonna work.
We'll see.
It might.
I don't think we needed to know that.
Yeah, you did. I'm just softening the blow just in case this doesn't work. And
oh.
It sounds weird because this is written for a different voice. Okay. Are you in search of the most tawdry and scandalous partial leg coverings at an outrageously unaffordable price? Do you wish to show your associates that you mean business upon the thigh, but are all party shin downward? Well then, my good man, look no further than Nathaniel Aloysius Asquith's Kinky Knickerbocker Kingdom. We have everything you need to make your most outlandish baggy knee trousers dreams, an ill-fitting reality. Whether you are a haughty gadabout, keen on the unencumbered exposition of your finest silk stockings, or perhaps a sporting gentleman with interests including American rounders and feetball, you will find yourself boundlessly in luck here at Nathaniel Aloysius Asquith's Kinky Knickerbocker's Kingdom, as all manner of knee pants and shin slacks are housed within an abundant, quizzically priced quantities. Though do take heed. If you have come upon Nathaniel's in the misguided search of breeches, I will kindly ask you to remove yourself from these premises under your own steam before the option is no longer extended to you and you are forcibly removed by one of our many knickerbockered retail constables. Your kind is neither wanted nor accepted in this fine establishment, you equine straddling bastard. So come, visit Nathaniel Aloysius Asquith's Kinky Knickerbocker Kingdom today, where our trousers are always 30% off. The floor, that is.
Very good.
Oh, so dumb.
I'm not sure a hush ever fell over the crowd if it started that way. We're going to move on to the next segment called Movie Makeup. Here's some movie titles we made up. Give them a synopsis. Tell us what they're about. Corey Barringer. Please tell us what your movie title's about. The Tales of Joe Cocker Spaniel. Okay. The Tales of Joe Cocker Spaniel.
What would you do if I sang out of tune and I also have a hideous mutation that causes me to constantly grow tails? This is what legendary soul singer Joe Cocker Spaniel asked of all of us, and boy, did we answer. In this groundbreaking drama by the director of several Air Bud films, we follow the rise and tragic demise of one of rock and roll's most frequently operated upon stars. Born to a humble upbringing and only one tail, he would grow up to not only have a powerful singing voice, but also keep growing more tails, one every year, all of which caused excruciating pain. His stage persona, the jagged and wild body movements he would become famous for, hid the darker secret of his condition, and his singing would become his best alternative to simply screaming about how much his tails hurt. His story has inspired millions, proving that raw talent can overcome even the hardest obstacles in life, such as drug addiction or having tails that keep growing instantly after they're amputated. The film's heart-wrenching climax comes as we see each of his tails, 70 of them at this point, smother Joe in his sleep, finally ending the unbearable agony that was his very existence. At last, he got a little help from his friends.
I think it's all funny, Corey. Why are you looking at me like this? I like how you end each prompt with,
well.
It's very good. Very good. Libby. Libby, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm suffering from mastitis in my left boob right now, so I'm a little uncomfortable, but...
Okay. All right, Libby. The name of your movie is called Ginger No!
Ginger No is a story about a dog named Ginger. She works as a police dog and is really, really good at finding drugs and, like, bags of things and missing children and whatnot. And... one day, during one of Ginger's work days, she's about to uncover a mass grave that's filled with multiple children bodies. And anyway, the movie is called Ginger No! And I don't want to ruin it for you, but it is a real thriller.
Thank you, Lippy. Thank you. Jesse Jones. the name of your movie called Muppet Gravy.
Yeah. Also a documentary. Muppet Gravy is a documentary from the Henson Company, which takes a peek under the felt, fur, and foam, and shines a light on the hot, sticky underbelly of debauchery and depravity that is the world of professional puppeteering. Not for the faint of heart, Muppet Gravy stares into the googly eyes of drug-fueled sex parties, echoing with some of the silliest, most sensually cartoonish cries of ecstasy heard this side of Sesame Street. Coined in 1968 by Frank Oz, the term Muppet Gravy originally referred to the sweat built up on the arms of puppeteers during long, strenuous hours of performance. Not long after, though, making Muppet Gravy became the shorthand used to refer to the scene at Henson rap parties. The only rules at these events were that everyone left their pants at the door. And that at all times, one hand must remain inside a Muppet. Where the other hand went was up to you. Muppet Gravy. Rated R for adult situations. Suggestive phenomena. And full frontal fraggle.
Oh my God. That was movie makeup. That takes us to our next segment. Oh, I really enjoyed this. Top five Google searches of, please have all composed the top five Google searches from the perspective of the best you. If the best you could search Google, what would the best you search? We'll do all five at a time for each of you. Corey?
Okay, so...
We'll do one at a time, I'm sorry. One at a time.
Car stuff, because I definitely know how those work.
Very good. Libby?
I think I misunderstood the assignment.
Okay.
I just wrote down my latest top five Google searches.
Okay.
Number one would be the best shovel for breaking frozen ground.
Okay. Okay. Very, very good. Okay. Jesse.
Yeah.
The best you.
Best me. First one. Is it possible to be too friendly and approachable?
Corey, you're second of five.
Chat rooms for people that understand Frank Zappa.
Libby?
Accelerant near me.
Okay.
Second is destination vacations for the gainfully employed.
Corey, you're third of five.
Tips for how to come faster. Kind of the opposite of that problem right now. So.
Libby?
All right, this one's a little lengthy, but when burning the remains of a small animal, will all the contents turn to ash or will they still be able to compare the animal's teeth to the animal's dental records? Question.
Jesse.
It's a product search. Commercial grade filing cabinets capable of containing a seemingly endless stream of finished projects.
Very good. Are we on four or five? Four.
Okay, so this one is basically something that I search like once a year anyway, but I figure even my best self is still going to search it.
Okay.
Afro Man still alive?
All right. Libby?
Brendan Dacey's home address or LinkedIn profile.
Okay. All right.
Brushes strong enough to handle a head full of the thickest, most luxuriously flowing masculine mane of cunnilingus handlebar hair.
The fifth of five.
Karate friends. I'd like to think I'll have a black belt, by the way, so I want some friends on my
karate
level.
Friends.
Karate friends.
All right, number five, Kanye breakdown.
Okay. All
right. My last. Does the middle finger serve any purpose beyond making high fives more awesome?
All right, that's the top five Google searches from the perspective of the best you. That brings us to our final segment of the evening, of this month. Okay, final segment of this month. It's called Write an Erotic Poem About It. All three of you were given subjects to write erotic poems in regards to. We're going to start with you, Corey. Please have written an erotic poem in regards to home renovations.
Gotcha. So what this requires is all you need to know that there was a show on PBS years ago called This Old House.
Okay.
Hosted by a jovial sprite named Bob Vila.
Bob Vila.
And I have fond memories attached to it. So this was actually a very personal piece for me. So okay. It's called Bob Vila is My Flannel Daddy. This old house needs TLC. Tender love and cock for me. Of course, that's cock spelled A-U-L-K. But let's be clear, I'm aching delay. Beside the handyman of my dreams, the fix-it king to my fix-it queen. Though patiently I must now wait, to reruns I will masturbate. I burn to watch him renovate. And I learned from his tips that are actually pretty great. Like just little stuff you could do around the house to make a difference on improving the overall quality of your living space. Don't know how long I'll be lasting after he starts sandblasting. We'll make this drywall wet with passion. Slap my ass and paint my patio. Bob Vila is my flannel daddy-o.
Very good.
Thank you.
Corey. That was beautiful. Lippy.
Yeah.
Please have written an erotic poem in regards to the Spanish language.
Yeah, I was just noticing, there's not a whole lot of Spanish speaking going on out there in Minnesota.
Okay.
But when it does happen, I notice that no matter what it's saying, even if it's nonsensical stuff, it sounds super sexy, you know? So, you could say things like this. Mis zapatos me duele por mi dedo gordo.
Okay.
And that means my shoes hurt because of my big toe. Or you could say things like, El gato está cerca de la silla. Which is, the cat is near the chair. You can also say things like, Boroguito, Boroguito como tú no sabe queso a amor. Which says something like, you're stupid, you don't know cheese from love, which is a problem in Minnesota, you know. And other ones like, beso, beso, no me gusta queso. Which means kiss, kiss, I don't like cheese, which you shouldn't like that person, because come on, cheese.
Very good, Lippy. Thank you for filling in on your vacation out here. Out west. Thank you. We'll see you at the thing. Jesse Jones, please have written an erotic poem in regards to Meals on Wheels.
Yeah. Well, I sadly used all my fire rhymes in the last show. So So this is sort of a free verse. All right. Slowly you enter, filling my empty void with your hot meat. Hungrily I take it into my mouth, tasting its juices on my tongue. Soon you ask if I am ready for dessert. With a mouthful I can only nod yes. You fill me up like I haven't felt in days, and then just as quickly you're gone again, leaving me with your sweet taste on my lips. Later I'll heat up the food that you brought me too.
All right, that's the end of Stab this episode. One more time for all the contestants you saw. Corey Barringer, my cousin, Lippy Whatnot, and Jesse Jones. Jesse Jones! Give yourselves a hand for sitting through this. I appreciate it. One more time for your contestants and yourselves. If you'd like to hear more Stabs, go to one of our many online outlets, the primary of which being iTunes. Leave a review. Go to SoundCloud, Stitcher. If you want to see some of the show, we have some stuff up on YouTube. Check that out. Also, December 16th, come out, celebrate our 100th episode at the Sacramento Comedy Spot following a burlesque show, 321 Sizzle. It's their last time in town as well, so it's just boobs and pasties and Stab. So come on out. Thanks for being here. Bye.